Alaska is in the third year of the state's first recession in nearly three decades. In many ways, the downturn hasn't been as bad as some Alaskans feared. But the fundamental problems that triggered the recession in the first place aren't going away anytime soon. And that poses real challenges for recovery. I'm Ann Hellman. We'll discuss the recession and what it will take to achieve economic growth again on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
The good news. Alaska isn't repeating the dramatic recession of the 1980s. Housing prices haven't crashed, and people aren't flooding out of the state, though outmigration is happening and the state has lost thousands of jobs. The path to economic recovery isn't clear-cut. We have three guests today who have been thinking a lot about the recession and what the recovery might look like. Musin Ghatabi is an assistant professor of economics at UAA's Institute of Social and Economic Research. Hi, Musin. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Neil Fried is an economist with the state. Hi.
Good morning.
And on the phone, we have John Bittner, who's the executive director of the Small Business Development Center in Anchorage. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And to all you listeners, what's your experience with the recession? Do you feel it or not? Let us know by calling 1-800-478-8255 statewide or 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Musin, let's start with you. Can you kind of set the stage for us and describe where exactly the economy is 3 years into this?
Yeah, so as you stated, we've just finished the second full year of the recession. We've lost thousands of jobs. It hasn't been as bad as some have feared, myself included. I don't believe that we were repeating the 1980s. However, as you've correctly pointed out, we've lost jobs not just in those initially hit sectors that were oil and gas, construction, state government, and professional and business services, but I think importantly, the recession has spread in the second year to sectors that are more dependent on household spending, which means that the recession has become more visible. What I mean by sectors dependent on household spending are restaurants, your hotels, your retailers, and so that's where the recession is right now, right? And so we've the rate of job loss in those initially affected sectors has slowed, which means that if you're looking year over year in oil and gas, it looks like things are getting better because we're losing fewer jobs year over year. However, basically, the recession has made its way downstream. In other words, it's now affecting these businesses that we interact with every day and that depend on people voting with their pockets. And those are still feeling the squeeze.
I guess logically to me, like you lose this big chunk of jobs in the oil and gas sector. Yeah. Of course, the loss of jobs would slow down. You don't have as many jobs to lose. So the year over, why would you assume that that would indicate it was getting better since we're not losing as many oil and gas jobs?
It's not that it's getting better. It's that the speed at which the losses are happening is slowing, right? Which is important. Meaning, yes, in absolute numbers, you have fewer jobs. But if things were still getting worse, you would still be seeing sizable drops in employment in those sectors. And that's not happening, right?
Okay.
And so it's not that we're back to where we were. And so we're just saying that what we're seeing is that the rate has slowed. Yes, in absolute numbers, we're starting from a smaller number, but it's still indicative of the fact that marginally things are not as bad as they were, you know, 18 months ago.
And Neil, would you agree with this
description? Yeah, I don't think I could say it any better. I mean, it is true that usually the recessions start larger and then the number of jobs lost does slow down. But, you know, it also tells us that we're getting maybe closer to the light. You know, the light at the end of the tunnel is closer to us. I mean, we went from 2% job losses in 16 to 1% last year to right now, if we look at our January numbers, we're looking at about 0.5%. So, you know, those numbers are getting smaller and smaller, which means that we are potentially getting closer to the end of the recession.
So when I hear numbers like 2%, 1%, I think, oh, that's not much. Is that actually a bigger deal in a state like this?
When you hear the jobs, it sounds more significant. We've mm-hmm. lost about 12,000 jobs cumulatively when it started at the end of 2015 to the current date. That's a pretty big number, you know, of jobs. And if it continues on, that, you know, you start getting a cumulative effect. We don't live in calendar years. Our numbers do. But, you know, so, you know, that cumulative effect has, like Musin was saying, that we initially lost a lot of our jobs in those basic sectors that were tied to oil and gas. And now it's spreading to other sectors because there's just simply less payroll, less income rolling around in the economy, which mm-hmm. starts affecting those consumer sides of and that's hasn't come to an end.
Is that affecting other sectors as well? Is it affecting like education or healthcare?
Yeah, it's right now the recession has spread throughout, right? And so the one quote unquote recession proof sector is healthcare, and that's a complicated story, right? And so because healthcare growing is not necessarily the best thing for the economy in the long run, but for the time being, it's actually been the one sector that's held up incredibly well and the one sector that's actually gaining jobs.
Why is it held up well and why is that not good in the long run?
Well, it's held up well because a combination of Medicaid expansion, DACA, the Affordable Care Act, okay. The Affordable Care Act, the fact that Alaskans are getting a little bit older. And so those are all the reasons that contribute to the fact that healthcare is growing. But as you know, we have a healthcare crisis and healthcare prices have risen dramatically. And so, as I always say, I go into one room, I wear two hats at ICER. One is that of a regional economist, the other is of a health economist. And so I go into one room and I say, if it weren't for healthcare, this recession would be considerably worse. And I go into the other room and I say, healthcare prices are increasing at an incredibly fast pace, and this is completely unsustainable. Is why I say it's good right now. However, the fact that we're gaining jobs in healthcare means that we're spending considerably more money on healthcare services.
Okay.
And I think it's also important when we contribute to this, as we say that healthcare is the only sector that's growing, but it's because of the taxonomy that we use right. to describe the economy, because there are other industries that are growing in Alaska. For example, the visitor industry. You know, last year we had a record number of tourists in Alaska, and the mining industry is also, exploration is turning positive, and there's some in the military and those kinds of things. But because of, you know, even though we may have growth that is tied to those, there's other losses that sort of overwhelm that growth. Like hotels is a very good case in point. You know, hotels, you know, benefit from sort of two things. One is the visitors that come up here in the summers, but also business activity. And business activity is down, so that sort of hurt hotels. On the other hand, the positive is in the summer, they're more full than they've ever been. So it's, you know, we have to think of that as well, because, and healthcare is an interesting one. That one's just been growing forever. I mean, we've had other years, actually, in the past 10 years, that if healthcare hadn't grown, our numbers would have turned negative, and we could have almost said we would have had a mini recession.
Huh. It's
very strange. But
and it also sounds like delicate definitions in some ways.
Well, and there is no good definition of recession. The only way we've decided to define recession is losing jobs for 3 quarters, and then we can say we have a recession. But you can define it however you like. Not however you like, but
I'm not sure if you really want to give that freedom out there. We can ask our listeners to start defining recession. Speaking of our listeners, you are listening to Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about the local economy in the state. Contribute to the conversation. Give us a call at 550-8422 here in Anchorage, or 1-800-478-8255. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. John, we have you on the phone. You work with small businesses. We've heard all this negative things. Jobs are lost. Things are going not great. How is it in the small business world?
Well, you know, the best part about being the least educated person on the panel is that I can I can be a lot more optimistic than the folks that have all the numbers. We work with about 1,000 businesses every year. We also just completed our small business survey to get a better feel for where our clients were at and, you know, what was going on in the sector, and they've actually got a lot to be optimistic about. A lot of them, the majority of them, were going to be hiring or maintaining their staffing levels. A lot of them were looking for additional funding for expansion or new products and services. And they were fairly optimistic about their financial prospects going forward into this year. And I think the vast majority of them said they did well last year. Now, we have a much smaller sample size than the data that ICER and Department of Labor are working with. But what we're seeing is a real heating up of Alaska's small business sector, which I should mention for those of you out there who are unfamiliar with how we define this, terms are everything, right? Mm-hmm. 99% of Alaska businesses fall under the category that we call small businesses that the SBA defines.
So then what's a small business exactly?
Oh,
no. We've, John, you're cutting out a little bit here. I'm going to turn to Neil. Neil, can you talk about what a small business is?
I can't remember how it is defined, but it is true that most businesses in Alaska, you know, because it's a national description, do fit that definition, but I don't know what that definition
however,
is exactly.
However, most Alaskans work in a large business.
That's correct.
Most businesses are small businesses, but most Alaskans work in large businesses.
Right.
And when you say large businesses,
So think about the typical definitions are 1 to 9, 10 to 49, 50 to 99, mm-hmm. and then 100 and larger.
Okay.
And so most of us are employed in an organization that has 100 or more employees.
Okay.
Even though in terms of numbers, mm-hmm. those organizations are few.
And to be clear, when you say businesses in this context, are you also including nonprofits and government?
Yeah, I'm including
okay, so
everything.
So just all organizations.
Yeah, think
of
about
a
them
large
as
size.
Establishments or entities or.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even if you excluded government, that would still be true.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so let's focus on government a little bit. There's a lot of government jobs. How are they doing? How are we doing? I mean, we hear so much about the state losing money. Are people still working for the government?
So interesting way of thinking about it. So in my analysis, what I've tried to do is think about the number of state government jobs, for example, in 2017 relative to those jobs in 2014. And so as Neil was explaining before the show started, there is a lag between when jobs come out and the current setting. And so in the report that I put out, I was using June numbers. And so as of June 2017, there were about 91% jobs in state government relative to that number in 2014, right?
Okay.
And so so that means that, you know, we've lost jobs in state government. Local government is the one that continues to puzzle me. And if any of the listeners have ideas as to why that's the case, then I would love to know the answer. Right as of June 2017, we were at about 102% of the level we were at in June 2014, which means that local government employment was actually slightly larger than it was in June 2014. And again, local government is comprised of a lot of different elements, and so it's tough to decompose, but it's one that's held up really well. And in fact, I've argued in the past that it's one of the areas that's held up considerably better than I would have expected, right? And mm-hmm. so I did an analysis a couple of years ago that showed that $1 out of $3 going into local governments comes from the state. And given, as you've correctly pointed out, that state revenues have declined, you would have assumed some sort of trickle down into local government employment. Mm-hmm. And we just haven't seen that to the extent that I would have anticipated.
Well,
mm-hmm.
You know, actually, when you look at the more recent numbers, you know, I think it's just been delayed longer than we thought.
And that's what I've been arguing.
Right.
But
you know, and when we talk about local government, people think of, you know, boroughs and cities like the municipality of Anchorage and such, but it really, the big numbers are in the school districts.
Okay.
That's where most of the employment is. There's also tribal government as well, but those numbers are beginning to decline. So that growth is gone now, but it's happened very recently. I agree with Mussina. It was puzzling to us as well. We thought it would sort of go the way of state oil revenues, mm-hmm. but it hadn't until fairly recently. We're beginning to see that trend change, and actually, you know, it's a delayed effect, and I, there's a very good chance we will have fewer employees in local government at the end of this year than we did last year. So it is beginning to happen. I think it's just been more of a delayed impact.
And so it's cutting positions, or it's just not filling?
It's both.
It's everything.
A lot of it's attrition in government, particularly even in state government. We've seen, and state government here includes the university system, which is again a big player. A lot of that, some of it's cuts and a lot of it's attrition, but it's still a job lost to the economy no matter how it happens, and that payroll's not out there anymore.
Mm-hmm. And we have John Bittner back on the phone. John, thanks for coming back. We were talking about small businesses before, and you said that you have this small sample size with your survey. I was looking at your survey, so you sent it out to 2,500 different businesses, 350 respond. Is there any way to know if are people more likely to respond to a survey if they're doing well versus if they're not doing well? Like, does that skew your data at all?
You know, it's definitely possible, and the two economists can probably speak more deeply on the statistically significant side of the science. What's interesting about this is because we work with all of 2,500 of these businesses, we actually have a pretty robust data set for all of them.
Okay.
So the parts of this that are a little more qualitative than quantitative, like how do you feel about the economy going forward, that's not something we ask them as part of our business advising, but in terms of the financial and capital infusion and are you going to be raising money and how's your financial health, that's stuff that we actually have data on for all of them. And what we're seeing is actually pretty positive across the board. I mean, there's obviously examples of folks that aren't doing as well as others, but I think that, you know, we're seeing people really get it. A lot more people are getting into small business, I think, as they transition out of these other job sectors. And they're really starting a lot of different new businesses that are creating new jobs. Now, not enough to offset what's happening, but over a long enough timeline, we're pretty optimistic about this sector's ability to sort of help us balance what's happening.
And what sort of new businesses and new jobs? Because I know I hear in the news, like restaurants aren't doing quite as well. And even household spending numbers, as Musin was saying earlier, aren't quite as high. So what small businesses are doing great?
Well, it varies region by region. I mean, the difficult thing about, or actually the wonderful thing about Alaska is that there's so many different areas with a variety of different industries that thrive there. But obviously, as I believe it was Musin said, it's tourism industry is going gangbusters. We're seeing quite a few new businesses in that sector. We're seeing an interesting upswing in food manufacturing, breweries, distilleries, but also value-added food products. And the construction industry, we think, is starting to see an upswing in the Fairbanks area. I think $120 to $150 million worth of military construction contracts just dropped there in the last 3 weeks alone. They're seeing a pretty interesting upswing there. And beyond that, professional and technical services industries. And these are smaller shops that are providing sort of professional and technical skill sets to larger employers. We're seeing an upswing there, and that could be a result of the, you know, sort of the downsizing in some of the oil companies and the secondary services providers.
Like people are just moving into different industries instead?
Well, yeah, we're opening up their own shop in their area of expertise and providing those services to a broader range of clients, both inside and outside of Alaska in some cases.
All right. I'd like to turn to the phones. We have John from Anchorage on the line. John, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. And yourself?
Very good. Very interesting program. I just had a couple. Well, one. It may be more than one question. I'll leave it to your members of your group there to decide what the questions are. But fundamentally, I've been here long enough to know that the whole image of Alaska was to build Alaska. That's been a long-term goal. It started way early on after all the oil money started to roll in. Between the oil money and, of course, federal funding that came in under Ted Stevens, we had this huge budget, like $12 billion a year, something on that order. Now we're down to a few billion dollars a year. And the difficulty is trying to survive all that. My question really has to do with how do we retain a consistent expenditure level so that we don't end up with this situation arising again. Sometimes we have these ambitions of ultimate positive response to economic growth, and in reality, over the long run, it turns out oftentimes to be calamity in the end. So I really like to know what they think about how we're going to sustain ourselves without becoming outrageously overspending. Thank you.
Hey, thanks very much for calling. Either of you want to jump into this?
I can.
Mm-hmm. I think he's the expert in this.
We looked at a government spending across states a few months ago, and I mean, John is right. Alaska's spending is incredibly volatile, and it fluctuates with the money that rolls into the state. And, you know, between 2005 and 2014, about 90% of unrestricted GF was coming from oil revenues.
General fund?
General fund, yes. Unrestricted general fund revenues. And so it's true, it's volatile, but it's also true that that's the case just about everywhere else, right? And so, and that's not to say that it's okay, but it is the case that government expenditures tend to respond to the strength of the economy. And in our case, because of the paucity of revenues, whenever there is an opportunity to expand on projects, it happens. Mm-hmm. We're in a slightly different situation right now in that obviously the share of revenues coming from oil has declined, and B, we're obviously having a conversation about whether or not and how much to draw from the earnings reserve. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if that were to go through, then we're going to get to a point where we can fund some sustainable form of government. I think that the more pressing question for me anyway is it seems like we've solved that channel, right? And so oil and gas used to, in my mind, not legislatively, I'm saying in my mind, that problem is easy. Oil and gas used to affect Alaska through two channels, government revenues and then the state economy, or the private economy, I should say. It seems like there is near consensus, maybe just in my head, on using the earnings reserve and potentially plug in that hole that oil and gas revenues have left. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we've had a serious conversation about what comes after oil to have us have a robust economy, right? And mm-hmm. so we have this economic engine that's severely weakened, right? It's at maybe 75% of what it was 3 years ago. And I'm not sure that, you know, we've had the real conversation about what comes next. And so.
All right. Would you like to add anything, Neil?
Well, not really. I mean, what comes next is always really difficult to tell. I mean, when we look at Alaska historically from an economic standpoint, most things that have happened have been a surprise mm-hmm. that none of us ever predicted, whether it was, you know, the Anchorage being chosen, for example, as the headquarters for the railroad, which was just a person's decision, or the price of oil went skyrocketed mm-hmm. to $5 a barrel, and, you know, Prudhoe Bay, and all these things, you know, or World War II happened, and, you know, the military boom. So, you know, those are hard. But I think also, you know, when Musin's talking about the whole revenue stream, what that would also ultimately mean is it would add a lot of diversity to our economy. And I don't think we look at it that way, or we don't talk about it in that respect, but it would. And if that does happen, and it's already happened for Musin, I mean, that would be, you know, fascinating. I think it would be, you know, good for the state, but also just as an economist is a sort of a fascinating thing that could happen to Alaska.
Just getting...
Receiving a very large economic stream of, you know, a big chunk of our government or our big chunk of our economy would actually come from the sustainable source, mm-hmm. like something like a foundation or whatever that ends up looking like, mm-hmm. if it does occur.
So you guys keep tossing around the word that I hear often with our economy, diversification.
I banned that word in my classes.
Did you? Because you're the one who just said it.
I honestly do. I said diversification of revenues, not of the economy. So,
why do you ban the word diversification of the economy in your classes?
Because every expert solution to a state recession is diversify, as though it were easy and as though it were a low-hanging fruit. And in fact, it's an incredibly difficult prospect, right? And so if it were easy, everybody would be doing it. And the reality is that our economy does not look terribly different than, you know, the economies of many states in the lower 48 in terms of actual industrial structure or the types of jobs that we have. Mm-hmm. And so I've argued for the last couple of years that Alaska doesn't have a diversification problem. It has a leakage problem. And what I mean is that a tremendous amount of value gets generated within the state. We have a lot of industries that generate a lot of money, tourism, fishing, air cargo, you name it. And yet, unfortunately, very little of that money sticks in state. And so, and I think that that's a much, again, I'm exaggerating here, but it's much easier to potentially tackle than to say, let's become the new leader in industry X and let's diversify.
Great.
So,
tell me how you keep the money in the state.
I mean, I think that public-private partnerships, I think that you potentially focus on businesses that can thrive. You identify which industries are doing well in which regions, figure out what do they buy from other states, figure out if you can potentially promote businesses that could replace some of that supply stream, if you will, and then make sure that you have a focused strategy in each of these regions that have really large industries that are thriving, that are doing really well. And then there is obviously the non-resident employment, but I think that that's a much, that's a bigger challenge, and I'm not sure that that's the one that's that can bring in as much money.
Why?
Because I think that, I mean, that's a long-term strategy, right? And so you have to have a state committed to educate people in certain industries. And I think the reality is that the workforce that certain industries need are just too diversified and we're just too small of a state. And so... I mean, again, that's not to say it's not going to happen. It's a worthy thing to try and tackle. It's just more difficult and it's not where the most of the money is going, I suppose, is my point.
All right. To all of the listeners tuning in, you're listening to Talk of Alaska, and today we are talking about the state's economy. You can join the conversation by calling 550-8422 if you're here in Anchorage, or 1-800-478-8255 outside of Anchorage. Tell us what you think about diversifying the economy or other ways to make Alaska strong. Chris from Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi there, Ann. Thanks. You know, previously your speaker asked the question of what it is keeping local government strong. And from 14 to 17, I think in Anchorage at least, one thing we've done is hired over 100 police officers. So we've kept the school district hold harmless from job loss up until this year, and we've increased majorly in our police. But we are seeing cuts in our school district this year, so I tend to agree with Neil's assessment.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm assuming this is Chris Constant. From
Anchorage
Assembly?
Yep. I think that's the only area in Anchorage, at least, where you've seen major investment in public employment. In fact, every other department's been cut. So that's the shining light.
All right. Well, thank you for your input.
And that is one of the, we watch those numbers every month, and that is one of the things that kept our numbers positive last year, but you know, of course, now we're looking at over the year change, and that sort of is leaving us now, and we are seeing the school district experience losses.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more comments and calls, talking about Alaska's economy, what's happening with this recession, what might get us out of the recession. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting March 14th and 15th starting at 9 a.m. at the AVCP Regional Housing Authority Conference Room in Bethel. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're talking about the state of Alaska's economy and the recession, ways we might be able to get out of the recession, and is it really that bad? Join the conversation by calling 1-800-478-8255. Here in Anchorage, it's 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. John, you have been working with small businesses. That's your focus. And we keep talking about optimistic potential. You're the optimistic one on the show today. Tell me what's going on with small businesses. Like, if we're focusing on retaining jobs, what's happening within the small business world to retain or create new jobs?
Well, what's interesting is they're still raising money. I mean, you know, you mentioned, I think two of your callers have both talked about, you know, government spending. Well, at least the first one, John from Anchorage. And I think that is having a bit of a chilling effect on small businesses' ability to raise funds. But they did manage to raise about $250 million just in loans in 2017, I believe. And, you know, that's not inclusive of any other types of financing. So there is activity in that sector. And I think that Machine made a very good point when you asked where we should be focusing our efforts. I fully agree. Pie-in-the-sky industries, I don't think, is really where we want to put our dollars right now. We want to put it into our strongest industries, which is the maritime sector. The mining and natural resources outside of oil and gas, not that we shouldn't support oil and gas, but, I mean, sort of expand that a bit. And look for import substitution opportunities. The military is expanding fairly significantly in Fairbanks and has a significant presence in Anchorage. How much of the stuff that they buy comes from outside, and can it be, can we provide it here? Is there a way? And there's actually several, I believe Fairbanks just is applying for a grant to try and discover those sort of supply chains and find ways to insert Alaska businesses into that process. Tourism industry as well. I mean, how do we capture more of those dollars? How do we get, you know, more people to come to the state? And, you know, trying to grow industries that already have a significant presence here, but expanding them past where we've traditionally had them and trying to get, you know, to leverage those strengths. I think that's the best opportunity that we have right now, especially in a time of limited resources.
And so are there people working on the problem of how do we insert ourselves into that supply chain?
Yes, in terms of the military, absolutely. I believe the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is working on a grant through the Office of the Office of Economic, I've dropped it. But it's basically they provide grants to communities to find ways to get more local businesses involved in this. And they're going to be, I think, hopefully they get that grant and they'll be able to look into it. But there's also work being done on the local level from the Fairbanks Mayor's Office. They're trying to provide certain public services that the city already provides to its residents and expand those onto the base. So public safety, trash collection, things along those lines, and trying to capture some more of those federal dollars as opposed to having them do it themselves. So it's there's people working on that in the maritime industry. There's a lot of work going on around the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, the work being done in Seward, as well as in other places to try and find new opportunities for expanding Alaska's ability to service that industry. A lot of the businesses and a lot of the business goes down to the Pacific Northwest, unfortunately, in terms of servicing the boats, building the boats, the technology that develops to improve their effectiveness and efficiencies.
And so they're trying to develop those capabilities up here? Like what's happening with the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association?
So they're spinning up an incubator program. They've been doing several different projects over the last few months. They did an ocean technology innovation sprint supported by the University Center of the Center of Economic Development.
What is that?
It's basically they got together a bunch of engineers and students and innovators and put them in a room and gave them sort of tools and support to try and solve some of the bigger problems that we're seeing in our local maritime industry, come up with new business ideas or new projects or products. And I think about 150 people showed up to try and solve these problems. And one of the good things about focusing on industries that are already fairly strong is we have a deeper bench than if we were to, say, get into, I don't know, carbon fiber manufacturing or something like that. We'd have to grow that from the ground up. But I think there's quite a few Alaskans that know, you know, about the maritime industry and about the seafood industry in particular. So trying to leverage those strengths, I think, is a great idea.
All right. I'd like to welcome Robert from Sitcon to the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I guess as a background, I lived in Alaska since 1952. I am a registered professional engineer, electric power, and one of our things that we do is plan. And so I've done a tremendous amount of planning, and I've also looked at how things happened over the state. The comments are very interesting. I always find that I see a deficiency in my mind, the idea that we don't see long-range economic planning. I see ICERs say really intelligent things, and the legislature, of course, ignores them. I see, you know, at the current time, we have some ideas that I think need to be put out there. We have, ever since I moved here in 1952, we have boom bust cycles. Booms bring people to the state. The depressions that follow the booms, people must leave. That's just fundamental economics. If you don't have the money, they need to leave. And we seem to always charge along on the concept that they never have to leave. We just have to find more jobs for the people to stay here, which is just not, doesn't make any sense to me at all. The other thing I'd like to comment on is we have so many lessons to learn by the gross mismanagement of the state in regard to new industry. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the Aleutian fishery. Again, I'm very much involved with the Aleutians and the cities and the processors. In my mind, the state made a huge mistake in not following through with the idea of having, of establishing a bank when the Aleutian fisheries was rising. The state failed to provide infrastructure finance, and that's why the entire fisheries business in Alaska is owned by Washington State and Seattle. That's what I had to say.
Thank you for your call, Robert. Neil, you have been in the state for a very long time working in economics. Can you comment on his...
I can just comment on some of them. Public policy, I'll let Musin talk about, and plans. We don't really get into that arena. We're more of, you know, nuts and bolts kind of numbers. But one thing that does sort of bother me is that we have this belief, at least in statehood, that Alaska's a boom-bust economy, and that is really not true. And we've had one boom, and we've had one, but well, we've had a couple of booms, and we've had one bust in all of our existence as a state. So... Now, for individual communities, there may be more of the booming, busting kind of stuff that's going on. But broadly speaking, has moved into our past. It sort of appears that it has. I mean, we probably will have booms and busts again sometime in the future. But I think that's just that's a kind of an economic myth out there. And I just, you know, try my best to try to dispel it.
Okay. I mean, you were here in the 80s.
I was.
Was that a big bust?
It was a big bust. It was a classic boom bust. And, of course, that haunts us now in this recession, because when this recession began, that was our sort of point of reference, because strangely enough, that was the last recession we had, which is kind of amazing. That was a long time ago. But that was really our only point of reference. So those of us who remembered or looked at the data, we thought, gosh, is this going to be similar? And obviously, it's ended up being very different. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but it's totally different.
Tell me how it's different. Explain that a little.
Well, first of all, you know, in the 70s and 80s, there were times we grew as much as 25% one year. We were literally booming. You know, we were growing very fast. We got way ahead of ourselves. That did not happen this time. This time was sort of a classic recession. We were growing actually very little prior to the recession, about 0.5% a year. And then the price of oil dropped and, you know, our economy reacted to that. And, you know, it hasn't been a real estate-based recession like the 80s. I mean, that's the story everyone thinks about, although there were lots of jobs lost then as well. And we haven't seen the huge out-migration that we saw. It's been much less dramatic. It's been more of your sort of classic recession that many states have experienced over time.
So this is pretty normal.
It's one that lots of other states have seen. It's not been normal for us.
But in terms of like the national context.
Yes. I mean, we studied 259 recessions, and it was, you know, 75% of recessions have lasted 2 years or less. Now, ours has gotten a little bit longer than that, and that's sort of getting sort of interesting. But this is more of one of those.
Interesting in what way? Like,
well, I mean, you get a little more worried that it's lasting longer than average, but, you know, average is average. I mean, And we could be getting close to the... And we have to remember that the end of a recession doesn't mean recovery. It just means that we quit losing jobs. And then the question is, how long does it take? I mean, when does recovery begin? How does it begin? And then how long is it going to take to just get back to where we were previously? Because we're right now, from an employment standpoint, we're at about 2011 levels. So we have a fair amount of ground to make up.
Mm-hmm. Messina, I see you nodding a lot over there. Would you like to add anything?
No, I think it's a fair assessment. As Neil said, I think that the economy is completely different than what it was in the 80s. I think demographically, the state looks very different, and I think that's incredibly important, right? The state is a little bit older. The average age is about 6 years older, which means that if you think about people's migration decisions, older people tend to migrate less often, right? They're less responsive to these short-term shocks. We have people that have money from sources that are not tied to the health of the economy, right? And so we talked a little bit about people over the age of 65, right? And so there, I hate to say this, and whenever I give a talk, I cringe a little bit, but you can think about them as an industry, right? And so they have a considerable amount of money that is not sensitive to how well the economy is doing, and they continue to spend, and that's incredibly important. And because we have more multi-generational families, those people are not just selling their homes and leaving, therefore... The recession, as we're experiencing it, is not becoming a mammoth that's impossible to deal with. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I fundamentally agree with the fact that this is a recession where the economic engine of the state is severely weakened, right? And so, and it's an economic base. It's the money that was bringing in the most. It's the sector that was bringing in the most money. And now it's much smaller. And so, you know, we're grappling with... Are some of the support industries mature enough? You know, if the new normal is a smaller oil and gas, what does that look like? What does the economy look like? Are the support sectors able to sustain employment and growth if, you know, our economic engine is smaller? And that's why, you know, now there are some of these questions about, should the permanent fund play some sort of role in the Alaska economy, right? Last year, a couple of months ago, the permanent fund was at $64 billion. Alaska gross state product is $50 billion. Mm-hmm. So we have a savings account that's bigger than the value of goods and services produced in the state. And yet, for all intents and purposes, aside from the dividend, it makes no footprint in the Alaska economy. And maybe rightfully so, maybe not. I don't know, but I think it's worth thinking about.
All right. I'm going to turn to email now. We have Peggy from Soldotna. She says, I am a small retail business owner in Soldotna. We have felt the downturn. We have lost oil jobs and will soon lose teachers as our state Senate refuses to consider an income tax for medium-high earners. Most of the old-timers I talked to wouldn't mind paying an income tax again. A sales tax on online sales would help in all local retailers, as customers must pay 6% tax here, split between the city and the borough schools. So she is suggesting that maybe a way to solve our local economy problems, or to at least help, would be income tax and sales tax. Musin, I know that your study looked into the impact of taxes. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, I think that the trade-off, at least a couple of years ago, was the fear was, yes, an income tax obviously produces a revenue stream, diversifies the revenues that come into the state. The concern was that in the short run, when you impose an income tax, you hurt the economy because you're taking money from people's pockets, right? Money that would have otherwise been spent. And so there was that concern that, yes, maybe an income tax or a tax of some form is... the right way to go. However, there are short-term implications. I think we're beyond that point right now because in the last analysis, one of the questions that I raised is, does waiting cost the state money as well? And the reality is that uncertainty has implications, which is exactly what the email says. People are sitting on the sidelines. They're not hiring. They're not investing. They're not building because they don't know, A, who's going to end up bearing the tax, And they don't know what the path forward looks like, right? And so if you're a business owner or if you're a large company, you don't know how many people to hire. You don't know what your five-year horizon looks like because you don't know where the state is going to get its money. You have no idea whether or not we're going to have our fiscal house in order or not. And so, and my estimates back of the envelope say that every year, the state is foregoing somewhere between $200 and $600 million in investment as a result of uncertainty. And those numbers are, in terms of magnitude, similar to what we would have taken out of the economy if we had imposed some form of a tax, right? And so this is all to say that, you know, just sitting and waiting is not actually doing any favors to the economy anymore, right? And so, and imposing some form of a tax, adding some form of revenue is really what we need to be having, not just a conversation, but potentially doing at this stage. So,
all right.
Well, and just yesterday, you know, it's funny. I read Musin's report, the whole idea of uncertainty and what impact this is having on our economy. And it's very, you know, it's hard to measure. But I was giving this presentation yesterday to this sort of, I guess you could say, diverse real estate company that does a lot of different things. And I was into my fourth slide, and the person there that owned this company said, you know, the outlook is really grim, you know, and it was affecting his, I mean, it was interesting. It was the first time I heard, I mean, I didn't get past that fourth slide for about 20 minutes. And the slide had nothing to do with this, but we were having this conversation. He was very, very concerned and had actually a very dark outlook, partially because of, or largely because of this uncertainty that Musin was talking about. So, I mean, it is manifesting itself, certainly. I mean, this was a classic case of it manifesting itself with an actual business.
Yeah, they're seeking stability. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more callers here on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the economy of the state. And I'd like to welcome Sylvia from Haines to the program. Sylvia, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi.
So I own a small sawmill, and I work for a cabinet maker. I live in Haines, Alaska. We have a fantastic state forest here. We're really lucky. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask a question concerning, you were just talking about diversifying the economy versus promoting existing industries.
Mm-hmm.
So 100% of my family's income is based on manufacturing added value timber products. And since I've been part of this industry, I see so much potential. Like, there's so much room for growth. It's an existing industry that, you know, is keeping, it definitely has a role in our town's economy, but it has so much potential for what it could be. And I'm 30, I have a kid, I have another kid on the way, and so I want to see industries that have long-term potential and really see local added value timber as economically sustainable, socially sustainable, environmentally sustainable. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a lot of work to try to promote it. I'm working with the Arts Confluence. We're doing an art show and trying to talk to our local government and trying to talk to, you know, both the kind of conservative and the liberal groups in our town. Mm-hmm. And so my question would be, like, you know, what else can I do to try to promote it? What resources are available in the state to try to communicate the, you know, potential growth for our timber industry?
Great question, John.
Well, you know, there are quite a few. I mean, we would, of course, the Small Business Development Center would love to help any way we can. I mean, that's right in our wheelhouse. There's also a lot of other economic development organizations out there that are, you know, they love promoting, you know, these types of opportunities. What I think is interesting about the industry you're in is it's both sort of a new industry and an old industry. Like, I remember back when Sitka's timber industry was big business. I mean, you know, so it's one of those weird gray areas between sort of what I think we were talking about, which is, you know,
new industries that have never really had a foothold here versus existing industries we can expand. Timber's sort of a middle ground there. So, yeah, I think that I would love to talk to you about a variety of different options. I mean, there's different social media and marketing campaigns that we can put you in touch with, support groups that help promote new economic opportunities, and, you know, anything we can do to help. That sounds like a fantastic business.
And thanks. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you, Sylvia, for your call.
Okay, appreciate you taking the time.
And we'll put links to John's organization up on our website in a couple hours. We have Jerry from Saldovia on the line. Jerry, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, thank you. And thank you, visitors there, for being there to answer questions. My question deals with the impact of reduction of the permanent fund dividend the past few years on the economy, and also the impact of the reduction in education funding. I guess I'll just take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Musin, can you speak to the economic impacts of this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did an analysis, it's now 3 years ago, I think, mm-hmm. of the economic impacts of different options. And the dividend is the most regressive option, the option that has the most impact amongst all the other options that the state has before it on jobs and on income, meaning that for a given amount of money that the state can raise, so let's say $100 million, if you compare the jobs that are lost from $100 million that's raised by reducing the dividend and you compare it to $100 million that's raised by imposing an income tax, the $100 million that's raised by reducing the dividend has larger negative effects on the economy.
So to put that in different terms, if we cut $100 million out of people's pockets from the PFD, that's a worse impact on the economy than cutting $100 million out of jobs.
Out of income tax.
Out of income tax.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's because most of the dividend is spent, and when the dividend is being given to every single person. And so one of the things that we observe is that the propensity to spend for lower income households is higher, which means that taking that money away has larger ripple down consequences. And so, yes, clearly the smaller dividend has had negative effects on the economy. Through jobs, through mm-hmm. income. And so, that's part of what we're dealing with right now.
So if we were to have the larger income, or the large, let me say this again. If we were to have the larger PFDs again,
okay,
and also have an income tax, it would be better for the economy.
So if you were to say, I'm going to add $100 million in dividends mm-hmm. and then impose $100 million in taxes, mm-hmm. net-net, mm-hmm. you should have more jobs.
Oh.
And so if you compare head-to-head the reductions in jobs, like I said, from taking away a dividend or from imposing a tax, you lose more jobs through the dividend than you do a tax.
But I think he also asked, you know, he was asking about the loss of income from dividends and loss of income from revenues. They're both pretty similar.
Yeah.
I mean, they're mm-hmm. both helping. I mean, they're both having the impact of shrinking the economy.
All right. I'd like to turn to Josh from Anchorage. Josh, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi there.
Hi.
My comments / ideas are actually part and parcel to what you were just talking about. All of our industry in Alaska, from oil to food, think Fred Meyer, you know, outside corporations, restaurants, electrical companies, all the money made leaves Alaska. We're not ever going to have a good economy until most of our money stops leaving Alaska. If you impose an income tax, it grabs money from the oil companies and keeps it here in Alaska, and it's spent here in Alaska. If you don't have an income tax, they take that money back to Texas. And this scenario plays out in most of our industries. And I'm wondering if the state has any intent to turn Alaskan industry back to Alaskans. Why don't we have locally owned grocery stores? Why is it so hard in Anchorage to open any business? It's pretty easy for a large corporation because they can afford the lawyers and they can afford to pay rent for a couple of years at a time. But for a local resident, they can't afford to pay rent for years at a time to open a business. It's so expensive that it pretty much guarantees that the only new business that's going to be started in the area is going to be by outside well-funded companies. And this happens over and over and over again. Until we reorient our economy to put money back into our economy, instead of depending on outside corporations for investment, we're going to yield the same results over and over again.
Well, let's turn to John Bittner. Let's talk about how difficult it is to start a new business here. Is it that difficult? Are there avenues to facilitate that process?
You know, I hate to disagree with the caller, but I don't actually think it's that difficult to start a business. Now, if you're talking about how to, you know, in 5 years still have a business, yeah, but that's not specific to Alaska. I mean, small business creation is a very volatile thing. I mean, a lot of them fail, and that's sort of why organizations like mine exist, is to sort of try and, you know, move the margins on that a bit. We're actually seeing an upswing in the number of business starts that our clients are doing over the last 2 years. We've seen more than in the past three. So it's, you know, and as far as rent and those types of things go, we're actually seeing a development of a lot of different support resources, organizations like the Boardroom, which is a co-located shared office space. It's actually never been cheaper to have the ability to hang a shingle and actually in downtown. The Hub in Fairbanks is another one. They have a shared space there where you pay a membership fee and you get, you know, all the accoutrements of an actual office, a copier, a coffee machine, meeting space, Wi-Fi, but without the overhead or even the long-term lease. We've seen more non-traditional or non-bank financing available to Alaskan businesses than we've ever had. Angel funds, I think there's at least five or six that I know of that didn't exist 5 or 10 years ago. Venture capital funds, native corporations are getting more aggressive at investing in small businesses or new startups in their regions and beyond. So I think that there's a perception, and this is a pretty common one, that, you know, it can't be done up here and things are significantly more difficult. I don't necessarily know that that's true across the board. I think that there's actually a lot of opportunities for new businesses. And there even are independently owned grocery stores, actually. There's the new Sagaya chain. There's several Asian markets in the Anchorage area that are all independently owned. Now, they're not as big as Fred Meyer's, but, I mean, let's be honest, I think that's true in most communities. I don't think that's an Alaska-specific issue. They're a giant, you know. And so if they come to your town, they're going to be the biggest game in town, but that still leaves room for others.
And in rural communities, are most of the businesses there, like, privately owned as opposed to large corporations?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in rural areas, I mean, small business is the only game in town. There's almost, you know, I mean, that varies. But, yeah, the smaller the population gets, the fewer of the larger chains you're going to find. So especially in rural communities, I mean, small businesses is all there is.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you to everyone who called in. My guests today were Mohsin Ghatabi, an economist with ICER, Neil Fried, an economist with the state, and John Bittner, executive director of the Small Business Development Center here in Anchorage. Thanks for everyone who's calling. This has been Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.